Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
Well, it's been an extraordinary race as we're starting to get some pit stops in GT Daytona. Just under the hour, 58 and a half minutes to go. That's, I think, probably doable by those cars. Shea Adam watching leading runners come in for what they hope will be their final stop.
Well, for the 14 Lexus, it'll be the longest stretch of the fuel tank that they've done all day. Jack Hawksworth coming in, fuel and tires for the 14 Lexus. As for the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari, I'm not entirely sure that Jeff Westfall is going to be taking it back out. I think it might just be Alessandro Balzan to bring the Ferrari to the end, but they also are doing fuel and tires. And also in the pit lane, Mikkel Jensen did hear us talking about him and decided to come down the pit lane. So I guess Peter Barron is listening to us on the Starworks box once again. Fuel and tires for that car too.
Yeah, interesting difference there is that the number 14 car has just done a 57 minute stint. So yeah, they're there or thereabouts, but they're right on the ragged edge, whereas the 63 Scuderia Corsa Ferrari has only been out there for 36 minutes. So they won't have nearly as much fuel to put in the tank when they go from here. But what they're doing, Jeremy, particularly with the 63, they didn't have to come in for fuel. They had fuel to spare. But what they're doing is taking their last pit stop right now and saying to the rest of the field, right, over to you.
That's right. And, you know, and if there is a full course cautioning, having made your final stop, you don't have to come in again. If the other guys do, then even if you fall back a little bit now, you're going to come out ahead when everybody else comes onto the pit lane as well. So it's just a tremendous tussle that continues to go on there. Just watching the two leaders again. We're on board with, been on board a fair bit now recently with Ricky Taylor. It's just a fabulous battle between those top two. And in the Michelin Endurance Cup, the number 31 car came into this weekend in fifth position in the teams championship in DPI. If the positions stay as they are right now, they will leave tied on points with a number 10.
Yeah.
So they've done a masterful job, number 31 car, of getting all the maximum points so far during this race, and they're out in front right now, but not by very much, of course.
Yeah. There was a scenario where if we got the right finishing order, we could have three cars tied at the head of the championship going into the last two races of the season as well. That's how tight it is. And literally, points, positions make points, Jeremy. So a position either way, one overtake, even for, you know, third, between third or fourth, come the end of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring in the middle of November, that could be the difference between winning a championship and not.
Well, it could, couldn't it? You know, it is that close. It's nip and tuck between those contenders. The number 8 car, by the way, has made its final stop, as Shea was telling us, and the gap over the number 16 car is 16 seconds. So that's a good advantage now for Tire Motorsport. 16 seconds, 409 laps in the books. And at the final stop, the number 8 car will need less fuel than the number 52 as well.
Yeah, and keeping our eyes peeled then for the closing stops for the GT LM cars, with Fred McAveeky making great distance on this current stint. Also, can't tear your eyes away from the... He is in now, okay. Well, yeah. I didn't think he could go much further, to be honest. The scrap at the head of the order. Did incredibly well. Earlier on, Nick Tandy done a 44-lap stint, but there were a couple of laps of caution within that.
Correct.
McAveeky doing a 42-lap stint.
All green.
Yes.
55 minutes and 52 seconds. So let's call that 56 minutes. So he's got that car right in to the window, and he's kept the pace up as well.
Yeah, he has. And there's only 53 minutes to go, so he's good. He's certainly good to go from here. And you're right, you know, he'd closed right in, hadn't he, on the 24 car at one stage. Slipped back a little bit towards the end of the sit, but he's still within 3 or 4 seconds before he made this, what for him will be the final pit stop of the day.
I think the advantage for Farfus is that, of course, when he comes in, he's only 32 laps into his stint. There'll be less fuel that needs to go into that BMW, so less time on pit road. Should be able to extend the gap greater than it was when they were scrapping on track.
But I'll throw this into the equation for anybody who stops early. The advantage is they get the new tyres on earlier, and therefore they get them up to temperature and have the performance advantage of the new tyres by the time everybody else stops. So you're going to claw some of that back in terms of the lesser time for fueling and be up to speed when your competitor comes out of the pit lane.
Yep.
Now, there's no time deficit for throwing on a new set of tyres, but that I wonder if there will be people saying to themselves in the cooler conditions, do we want to put a new set of tyres on and then have to get them up to temperature for a lap and a half or 2 laps when we know our competitors are breathing down our necks? What we want to take is those hot tyres back out on the track and the advantage that the shorter fill gives you.
Yeah, but you can't have both at the same time, can
you?
I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, the positive and negative nature of every move.
But
in
don't forget,
race,
you can
basically
fuel and tyre at the same time in this series.
Yes.
So putting the new tyres on is not an absolute amount of time.
Agreed.
So as long as you can get the tyres on in the time that it takes you to fuel, however long or short that is. Through turn one, the leaders are nose and tail again with a little bit of traffic playing its part. And this time it's Durrani having to defend right over the kerb at the top of turn two. The headlights glinting on the reflectors on the rear end of the Pipo Durrani Whelen engineering car from the front. Very bright white headlights of the Acura Team Penske, driven by Ricky Taylor. Through turn five, towards six, they've got a bit of clear road ahead of them as they break and down through the gearbox. Turn three, turn seven, Durrani and Taylor up on the kerbs, down the back straight. Now this is where the Acura has a real advantage in straight line speed. Gaining on the back of the Whelen car. Coming to the kink at the top of the brow through turn nine. Durrani has to go defensive down the inside to discourage the late dive. And he was right there, you know. There was a little lockup, I think, from Ricky Taylor in second place as he came into turn 10. But there's no doubt in my mind that that is where the greatest advantage is in that Acura, is just straight line speed.
Yeah, and also just nipping underneath the rear wing of the 31 as well. These cars are so dependent on the airflow across the car, and obviously you're going to be in air wash behind the leading machine, but then there is a little bit that you gain just because of the hole being punched in the air by the Pipo Durrani car. So another chance in a second or two for Ricky Taylor, heading down the hill towards turn six. There's some traffic ahead as well.
That's the 911 Porsche, and right at turn seven, right where Durrani doesn't need it, right where his competitor behind is strong. They were out in the 15s last time around. There was 3/10 of a second difference between Durrani and Taylor, to the advantage of Taylor, and that is all the lead was. Here comes Taylor again. Durrani's going to have to go to the inside and close the door. He does do. Did that a little bit late. Now, can Taylor go around the outside and pull the Pipo move? He can't. And Pipo holds on to that bit of a late move, Jeremy, coming over the top of the brow, and that'll be being looked at. It's not the same here in IMSA as it would be in Europe.
That's exactly right. He did it on the previous lap as well, and he fainted to the inside as well in turn one. He's definitely very much in defensive mode here, is Pipo Durrani. He's going to have to be a little bit careful. If he moves in reaction to the car behind him, that's going to be a problem. If he makes the first move, that's okay. Coming down the hill, I thought into the chicane the last 2 laps, it was a little bit marginal.
Shit, Adam, you've got the leader from GT Le Mans. This will be the last stop for the BMW.
And it was a driver change. Augusto Farfus jumping out of the 24 BMW. And no, Augusto staying in. Wow, it was a drinks bottle change that was happening, not a driver change. So the third driver, the non-full season championship driver car, is being given the honors of bringing it to the checkered flag. Although I will say, if you have a Gustav Farfus in your car, it's not a bad driver to leave plugged in. But I am seeing a lot of that, especially in the GTD field. We had Jeff Westphal left aboard the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari. He is the endurance driver. Jan Halen left aboard the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. Again, the endurance driver. Trent Himmen, 57. It's a theme today, gentlemen.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that, Jeremy. You've got a driver in there that's used to the conditions, knows the car, knows the state of the racetrack. He's just done an hour or so in those GT cars. If he's feeling fresh and his times are up to it, you're going to give him a new set of tyres and say, right up. Metaphorically speaking, pat him on the top of the helmet and say, bring it home, son.
Yeah, I agree. And he's certainly driving quite beautifully at the moment. Tell you what, the guy who's making some inroads lately has been actually Renger van der Zande. The gap from second to third only about 10 laps ago was 30 seconds. It's now 20. Tracking him also is Dane Cameron in fourth position as well. In car number six, Tristan Vautier has been left well behind. He's now more than half a minute behind in the fifth position. So he's not really a factor at this stage, but it's still, there's still an awful lot of racing to be done here.
And Jeremy, remember what we said about van der Zande. He's in the best position in terms of the fuel. So that 20 seconds, even if he doesn't pull any closer, some of that difference will disappear because he doesn't need to be stationary as long at his last fuel stop.
Absolutely right. And the number 31 car, that came in one lap before the number 7 on this last pit stop rotation. Number 7 is in behind the 31, so conceivably saving a little bit of fuel as well. The number 10 car came in three laps after the number 7, so that's got four laps advantage in terms of its fuel. But he's certainly running hard now, is Renger van der Zande.
Yeah, that number 10 Cadillac, we've seen that get very good fuel mileage in the past. Renger is on full stun mode. Meantime, you may have heard me say this before, but the leaders are coming out of turn 7 nose to tail, and they've got one of the P2 cars ahead of them this time, and a little bit of a draft being given to the leader as people pulls out last minute, goes down the inside, and for once doesn't have to defend so much to Taylor behind in the second place car.
That was Matt Bell they were getting past in 38.
What's happening out there now is Pippo Durrani is just trying to save some fuel. He's not going as fast as he was earlier on. With clear traffic, he's in the 11s. I think he's only turned a couple of 1 minute 10s during this stint. So that's slower than he was going before. Not quite as fast as he was going before. Might be a better way to term it.
Yes.
So he's just trying to stay ahead here and burning as little fuel as possible so he can take on less fuel than he otherwise might have needed at that final pit stop. That's the critical part. We talked about at the beginning of the race, how you can put least amount of fuel in for your final stop is going to put you in standing in really good stead.
I tell you what as well, Jeremy, the last stint was a 30 lap stint for Felipe Nasr, which was 36 minutes. That is, 8 minutes away. He's been out there for 29, nearly 30 minutes already, and he's got around about six laps to go. So he's going to be right there when it comes to going for the last pit stop. He's going to need all of that fuel that he can get in. I don't think they're going to be able to short fill that car at all. I think they're going to have to, as I say, 37 minutes is as much as that car has done when it's been fully lit, and they're going to have to be fully lit because if not for Taylor, then certainly for Renger van der Zande, because he continues to close in, albeit a 10th here, a 10th there, but he's definitely closing in. Now, have we got a problem for Simon Trummer? He's been off the track.
Yeah.
And
I think you might be right.
He's slowing down. He was off the track at the top of the hill at turn two. I'll keep an eye on that as...
Pit lane for Trummer.
Yeah, that's a shame. Was running first or second all the way through in LMP2. But that looks like an issue for the 52 car. Shea Adam has also been watching the final pit stop for what was the leading GT Le Mans car.
Tommy Milner staying aboard the Ford Corvette, the silver one, for this final stint. Fuel tires and a clean windshield for him. As into the pit lane does come the 52. I'm going to keep an eye on this and see if any mechanical indications are given as to what is going on with that car. But also in the pit lane is this sister car, quote unquote, the 51. That's the Inter-Europol competition car that was being run by Pier 1 Matheson this weekend, pitted in a different box because they are different entrant numbers. But both of those cars into the pit lane right now, as Augusto Farfus re-inherits the GTLM lead after Milner stopped.
Thank you, Cher, for that VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock report. I do my calisthenics as we get into the last hour or so, or under the last hour or so, and I've managed to displace the studio clock in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre for the second time this evening. But I think we're all right. Last 42 minutes to go. I think we've paced ourselves rather nicely. Oh, behind the wall for the 52, Jeremy. What cruel, cruel look.
That really is. That led most of the race. It was looking as if it would probably finish second. I don't think anything for the number eight car in the closing stages. It was going to have to take on a bit more fuel at what should have been its final pit stop. Looks like it's not going to get there, but it has been a great run for that team. The up at front, meanwhile, Pipo Durrani has upped the pace again now. I think the team was probably telling him, OK, you're good to go with the amount of fuel we've got to take on board at this final stint. You can run it, push it a bit harder. Both of his last two laps were in the 10s, 1:10.3 and a 1:10.8, and now in a 1:11.2, as he had a bit of traffic on this last lap. But the gap between those front two again still remains not much more than a half a second.
Cher has been talking to, in particular, the GTD teams. It's late in the evening now, and the air temperature almost into single figures at Celsius, just hovering around 11 or 12 Celsius. Track temperature, well under 20 Celsius now, Cher, and that's causing problems for the GT cars.
It's something that we were worried about after the cold running and morning warm-up this morning, and it's a problem that has actually come to rear its angry head now. Most of the GTD cars are running the same lap times between a 121.5 and a 122 flat. It's because they're having trouble actually getting heat into the tires. We were thinking that this wouldn't be as big of an issue because when the brakes were hot, that would help distribute the heat. But no, a set of tires that just came off of a GTD car during that last stop registered at 95 degrees. That is not operating temperature.
No, that's a good 5 degrees down. And after a long stint, you would expect them to be a lot hotter than that. And Jeremy, the issue is finding the balance. You have to push hard to put the energy through the tyres. But of course, if they're cold, you don't have the confidence to do that. It's a vicious circle in point of fact. So you can't get the heat into the tyres. Then you're putting laps on them, and the likelihood is they sort of get a bloom on the top of them, and then you can't get heat into them. Conversely, if you go too hard, of course, you might throw the thing off into the boonies.
Yeah, it's a fine line to tread, and particularly after you just made a pit stop, which all of these cars are going to have to do before the end of this race. That's when it's really tricky. If you take on fresh tyres, no tyre warmers, of course, in the IMSA World Tech Sports Car Championship. So do you stay out on the tyres you've got now, or do you put on a fresh set for that final stint? If you take on a fresh set, you've got to build the heat into the tyres, which in these cool temperatures is going to take at least a couple of laps. I spoke to Dane Cameron this morning. He said the first lap in particular is really dodgy out there. You've got to be super, super careful. After that, you should be okay. But as cool as it is now, it's going to be very, very tricky. And talking to Dane Cameron, he's slipping back all of a sudden very quickly from Renger van der Zende in the fourth position now in car number six. He had closed right in, but now he's dropping back at quite a considerable margin. He's now 10 seconds behind the third place car.
Now, got a bit of a timing glitch, I hope, for Augusto Farfus, who is shown is stopped on my timings. Not just been restored to life. Has he just come out of the pit?
No.
And he's got a huge lead now, because, of course, he needed quite a bit less fuel.
Farfus has dropped down to fifth on the timing screen after a 2 minute 41.9 lap. Now, is that a timing glitch?
Here come the leaders.
As the leaders come into the pits at 38 minutes, which is spot on what they can do. We'll try and investigate the BMW. Shea Adam, they are absolutely together, almost bump drafting on the pit lane limiter.
And who is going to give first? Well, the number 7 Acura Team Penske car hits its box first, coming in third in the team standings. The 31 will be in the second DPI box, being second in the DPI standings. But this is a fun pit stop competition between the two crews because it's the same service going on for both. Fuel and tires for both of the cars. Windshield tear-offs for both of the cars. No driver changes. So it's still Durrani versus Taylor. Let's see which of the teams can get rolling first and if there will be any different gap than it was leaving the pit lane, because they were nose to tail. All right, the Penske has the fuel probe removed first. It's off and moving. The Penske is in the lead ahead of Pipo, and Pipo now has to give way. That is a change.
And that is all of one lap fuel difference, Jeremy, from the last time they stopped.
It is. It's almost two laps now, because I think number 7 car was instructed to come in. When the number 31 car comes in, come in. We're going to take on less fuel. Yeah. If you're right on his bumper, we're going to have less fuel to take on, and we should be able to leapfrog him. That's exactly, I think, what has happened there between those two race leaders. This is fabulous stuff.
Augusto Farfus now restored to the lead. So that was a timing glitch. I wonder if there's something wrong with the transponder. That car has just come in to the pit lane, has it? I didn't see it, Shea.
I don't think so. I think there's something wrong with the transponder, because it is throwing it everywhere around my timing screen too.
It recorded a double lap time, effectively, because there was a 2:45 that came out of somewhere.
Yeah, good point.
That then, I think it was then manually put back in again by Alcamel as the race leader. Because they'd lap scored it round as an extra lap, or not an extra lap, but as an equal lap to Fred McAveekey, who's doing the chasing. Slightly concerning that the car's just been shown as in pit road as well. I'll do some digging to see whether that actually happened in reality.
Shit.
It did. It did. I've just gotten intel from group chat. Thanks, guys. It did come in the pit lane.
Right. Well, that means that's its last stop. So that's
already done its last stop.
It's already done the last lap.
It should have been good to the finish.
5 or 6 laps ago.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Splash of fuel, I'm being told.
So they got it wrong.
Shouldn't have needed fuel.
Shouldn't have needed fuel at all.
There's no way it needed fuel. It's only in 7 or 8 laps ago.
Eight laps, Jeremy. Spot on.
Yeah.
And those cars, 45 minutes, 50 minutes plus for those cars, surely. We've seen cars doing 43 laps in. Certainly the Porsches has, unless it's not picking up the last bit of the fuel, and that's what they're worried about.
No. It only just made a pit stop.
Did they have a problem getting the fuel in laps ago?
That's the thing,
They've done a 42 lap stint in the past, which was 54 minutes. So, as Jeremy rightly says, there was plenty of time when it stopped at 52 minutes past the hour. So, yeah, they were well inside where they needed to be.
Oh!
Leaders,
change.
Side by side through turn one, and a change for the lead, Johnny Palmer.
Durrani at turn one. Now, this isn't actually, well, it will be the race lead now, because Renger van der Zanne and Dane Cameron have pitted ahead of them. But Durrani getting a really good run out of turn 12, getting the line underneath Ricky Taylor. And the 31's back in front. So remember, the Acura beat the Whelen Engineering Cadillac out during the pit stop phase, and Durrani didn't have a moment to lose there. There's still opportunity.
Was there
those
a bit of traffic involved? There might have been. There was side by side. There was nothing. But in fact, was there a tiny little touch there as they went past one of the Lexus? Bit of a flash on the lights. And Durrani, well, to use the Daniel Ricciardo expression, he licked the stamp and sent it down there, Jeremy. He wasn't going to be tonight.
The door was left
That's
wider,
exactly what
it?
He did, John. I mean, that was he just wasn't going to slow down for that corner. I mean, you know, that's the confidence he has. They've done a couple of laps, so the tyres should be pretty much up to temperature. He's as much as they're going to get in these cool conditions. That was a really really brave pass by Pipo Durrani.
Shea Adam has more news on the lead, what was the lead GT Le Mans car, and there was a bit of drama, quite a bit of drama, Shea.
a little bit more than a bit of drama. The 24 BMW was punted off the track by a prototype. They don't know who, but the radiator was full of grass. And the guys on the box, who know what they're talking about, said that if they did not come into the pit lane, it was going to blow the engine. The left front brake was also on fire because there was no air getting to the brakes. So that's what caused them to fall out of the lead. And now the 911 Porsche is there.
Yeah, and also a lot of debris, grass debris in there. That's what had caught fire. Extraordinary stuff. Didn't see, didn't manage to identify in the dark. All kinds of strange things happens in the darkness. It's like the front row of a rugby scrum. You just don't ask. But it was definitely a prototype involved there. And that was at turn 12 a couple of laps ago. And that's what brought that car in for its unexpected stop. It leaves Fred McAvecky, who has made his last stop in the lead by 2.7 seconds. In second place, the Corvette of Antonio Garcia. He stopped only 9 laps ago, so he's fine to go to the end as well. Third is Lawrence Vanthoor, also stopped 9 laps ago. So 12 seconds between first, second and third, with only 3 seconds between first and second in GT Le Mans, and those cars all fueled to the finish. Farfus, another 9.5 seconds further back after that unplanned pit stop.
Yeah, and apologies for the confusion surrounding that. It unfortunately followed the point when Farfus's transponder hadn't triggered for a lap. We got to the bottom of that.
I know why it didn't trigger, because he didn't cross
through
the start-finish line.
Of course.
He was on the grass as he went across the stripe.
Yes.
And therefore, he didn't go across the loop. The loop is
the loop
buried
in the asphalt.
Exactly right. That makes perfect
mystery
sense
solved.
Now.
Well totally. Done.
Yeah. Once in a while, Jeremy, you know, you do this long enough, I'm bound to get something right if I make all these pronouncements.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well done.
Wow, what a fantastic race. Half an hour to go after the checkered flag. It's Michelin Post Race Tech. We'll have plenty to talk about, and you get your say as well. Hashtag Michelin PRT to at IMSA Radio. Hashtag Michelin PRT at IMSA Radio. Tell us what you think. Send us your queries or questions. Cheers to you as well, Simon. Slange. Will, you've made me think I do. Think that a little drop of the Irish might do very nicely at the end of this race, and I have a bottle that will do very nicely. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to Roy, good to know you're tuned in. Moni as well, Moni and Billy tuned in as well for this last half an hour. Predictions? are you mad? Not a chance. We'll just sit back quietly and enjoy this, Jeremy. What do you think?
Fred McAvecky leads in GTI, but only by 3 seconds over Antonio Garcia, so he hasn't given up the fight, I don't think. Well, I don't think. I know. The number 24 car, after making that stop, has come out, I think, just ahead, or is running at least now just ahead of the Tommy Milner car. So that's a big battle going on for fourth position. Such a shame for that BMW team RLL. They've done an absolutely magnificent job all the way through this race, and if they somehow got together with a prototype car just in the closing stages, that's a real heartbreaker.
Yeah, when you're looking to obviously survive the early stages of the race, and then when the wick is turned up, then I suppose there's always the chance of coming across not even traffic, somebody trying to get past you, and as yet an unidentified prototype car. But bitter luck for Farfus, who had no control once he was out on the grass. And then the secondary problem was the brakes overheating, because they're reliant on the air intakes in that grill, and then also the engine temperature as well on the 4.4-litre turbocharged V8, that the temperature was climbing sky high. And let's hope that they manage to address that problem in time. All the sensors will be beaming back to the pit wall now to tell them how that engine temp and the brake temperatures are doing. But particularly at night, when the flames are licking from the front rotors, very dramatic indeed. Pipo Durrani leading by 1.4 seconds over Ricky Taylor. So Durrani just starting to make that gap slightly more comfortable. However, as he rounds the next corner of the racetrack. Only then will he know what traffic he has to deal with, and if there are GT Daytona or GTLM cars two abreast, again it's a waiting game, and that will give Ricky Taylor another opportunity.
Just looking back at some photographic evidence of the Farfus running wide at turn 12, he did a splendid job not to go into the wall at pretty much unabated speed down there, and that's a full commitment corner. I would think the GT Le Mans will be a little dab on the brake and then pretty much turn in and get on the throttle straight away, and to find that you've just been pushed 6 feet to your left and all of a sudden your Michelin tyres aren't on the tarmac, they're actually on grass and red Georgia clay, that's going to be a little bit of a shock.
Yeah, it'll focus the attention, certainly, if your concentration started to wane. Not even close to that, though, at this stage of the race for any of the cars and the drivers that are in for the final few stints. It's just so perilously close at times for the prototype cars that have to get underneath GT Daytona machines, particularly in the sweepers. The fourth placed Lamborghini in GT Daytona, which is the car of Andy Lally for GRT Magnus, just being overtaken by the overall race leader, Pipo Durrani.
Well, it seems it's that time of night. I'm getting lots of pictures at IMSA Ratio of a variety of adult beverages, which is now just making me think, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Oh, and that's a good idea. Hello to Catherine Legg. No, she is tuned in. Kat, all the best. Hopefully the rehabilitation's going well. And cheering on Andy Lally in the event this evening. He's fourth at the moment for GRT Magnus. And just a second or so behind Townsend Bell. That could be a podium yet for the Lamborghini. Ferrari, Lexus, Lamborghini, Acura, Porsche for the top seven. And then Paul Miller Racing and the Lamborghini in eighth position. That's GT Daytona.
That's right, John. Andy Lally did get past Trent Hindman half a dozen laps or so ago to move up into the fourth position. And he whittled down a deficit of a couple of seconds or so to catch up with Townsend Bell. So, you know, with now 25 minutes remaining, that is very much a battle on for third position in GTD. I think Jeff Westphal has things pretty much under control at the moment. He is about 10 seconds. He's extended his lead out now to over 10 seconds over the second place car of Jack Hawksworth. So he's just going to try and bring it home from there.
Don't forget, coming up in about half an hour's time, Michelin Post Race Tech. Jeremy will do the arithmetic and run us down the championship standings. We'll try and grab a couple of driver interviews. Always difficult, of course, at a socially distanced operation. But Shea is already setting one or two things up with their PR teams up and down the paddock. But mainly, Michelin Post Race Tech is about you and your questions. Let's have anything that you've spotted or the questions you want answering, please, to at IMSA Radio, hashtag Michelin PRT. Michelin PRT for Post Race Tech. A few bits and pieces to pick out of this. Not sure we'll be able to do it justice this evening. Might take a week or so to calm us down and get to the bottom of what went on here. Effectively, it's just been good, hard racing. Still looking, now looking with under 20 laps to go at 462 laps to be completed if we keep up this pace at the front of the field. 24 minutes to go. Through goes Pipo. Another lap completed. 444 now in the book.
And that battle in GTD, we documented the battle between Townsend Bell and Andy Lally for fourth position. Behind them and slipping back a little bit in the closing stages, Trent Hindman, he came up with 57. He's got his mirrors absolutely full now, not only of the Jan Halen Wright Motorsports Porsche, but also the Pfaff Motorsports Porsche as well, with the factory driver Dennis Olsen at the wheel of that car. So that's a big, really intense three-car battle for fifth position in GTD.
It's Jeremy Shaw. And we've got Johnny Palmer, the voice of Radio Shaw Limited's WEC and ELMS broadcasts, joining us as well for this one. Half an hour to go, 20 minutes or so. Yes, you're happy with the levels of entertainment
yes.
here?
Yes, yes, yes and yes.
Okay,
I know,
excellent.
It's brilliant. I mean, you make a good point about the race distance extending. We're not really very far away from the 2019 race distance. If it continues to go up, 463 potentially we could reach now, which would only be too shy from last year's event. So we had a caution. How long ago was that? A good chunk of time.
3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours and 5 minutes ago. So it's your fault this time.
Well, we've had well over 1,000 miles of green flag running now. And of course, it was assuming we had the green flag.
Oh, that would have been done a long time ago.
We were going to extend beyond the 1,000 miles, yes. It was done 30 laps ago of green.
So 30 laps is about 40, getting on for 40 minutes, just a bit less than that. So that would have put us at just under, right about the 9 hour mark. We would have been finished if we'd been going to the old 1,000 miles. The lead has closed in again because, again, a little bit of traffic. And again, it's a GT Le Mans Porsche that slightly slowed. Durrani coming through 10A and 10B. It's gone. Oh, now it goes back out again. It's Ricky Taylor had to negotiate that traffic. And Trent Hinman might be in trouble. Lost a couple of positions. Hinman now down to seventh place. Jan Halen and Dennis Olsen in the Wright Motorsport and Pfaff Motorsport Porsches both gone through. And Brian Sellers now, the next car back. Well, he's half a minute further back. We've got a really interesting little battle there. Jan Halen, second and a half behind Dennis Olsen. And a further second back, Trent Hinman. And a 1:22.3 from Trent last time around was a little tardy. And a couple of Porsches have sneaked through, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the fact that he was coming under increasing pressure from both those Porsches. I would suggest he probably got offline when one of them went past. The other one said, thank you very much, I'll take a bit of that as well. Didn't see what happened, but you know, he'd certainly been... The two Porsche closed up on him, and so it's really only, I think, a matter of time at that stage. So, as you say, him and all of a sudden has fallen back to the seventh position.
He's not in any trouble fuel-wise, is he? Can't be. I'm just wondering if he's... No, he's about the same as everybody else. So if he's in trouble, so has everybody else. He's been out for 34 minutes and we've got 20 minutes to go. That's 54, 55, maybe let's say 56. But hey, we're not a million miles away from those cars. They do just under
an hour. Right.
But if there's one car in trouble, then they're all going to be in trouble in terms of fuel.
Yeah, I think it's just come down to the tyres and the kind of comfort level in these pretty tricky conditions with it being so cool.
Well, what a race it's been. And for those of you trackside, you will be able to say I was there in 2020 at the Motul Petit Le Mans. This could be one of the closest finishes ever. Durrani and Taylor have barely been a second apart for the last, well, seems like the last hour. They've swapped positions a few times as well, and whether it was on the pit lane or on the track, this has been a cracking run. Only takes two cars to make a motor race, and we've had two cars at least in every class that have been battling for the last 9 hours and 41 minutes, and it's still by no means over. Westphal now with an 11 second lead over Hawksworth in the GT Daytona category. Hawksworth trying to keep his pace up, keep the pressure on with Townsend Bell. About half a second slower than his teammate last time around, another 22 seconds further back. GT Le Mans, Makovecki by just 1.5 seconds as Tonio Garcia turns the screws and begins to put the heat on Fred Makovecki. terrible mixed metaphors there. In LMP2, that's the only class now with the demise of the 52 car, which went behind the wall quite some time ago. Mikkel Jensen has got things pretty much his own way with a 5-lap cushion. So what's that? Getting on for 7 minutes. They can afford to bring the car in, make a cup of tea, soft boil an egg, and then send him back out again. But at the front of the field, the top three cars separated by only 13 seconds and the top two by 0.3 seconds. Dame Cameron is only a further 10.5 back from a podium position, so still well less than 30 seconds away from the leader. Top four, 23.5 seconds between them with 17.5 minutes to go, Jeremy.
Yeah, and I'm looking at GTLM again. We talked about it, what, 5 or 6 laps ago. The gap between the 911 Porsche and number 3 Corvette was 3 seconds. A lap or so ago, it was 2 seconds. It's now 1.6, I think, at the moment. So Garcia is getting it closer and closer and closer to Fred McAvicky.
I tell you
Dirani
what.
Dirani there. Yeah. He had to get between Andy nice Lally and Townsend Bell in basically a braking area for turn six. And he went one side of the Lamborghini and the other side of the Lexus. And that has just given him a slither of more breathing space.
Now, I realise what's happened. I've actually got the wrong feed on the monitor. And we are watching an iRacing event. Yeah. I'm terribly sorry. I've misled you for the last 9 hours and 43 minutes.
I knew these games were getting good, but this is crazily realistic.
Oh, my goodness, it's extraordinary. And these are very fine margins. What trust that they have to have, these leading cars, Jeremy, as they're coming up to GTD, GT Le Mans, who are battling themselves, let's not forget, and they are leaving very little margin for error. Meantime, Andy Lally's got past Townsend Bell, and the Lamborghini for GRT Magnus is up to third position in GTD, Jeremy.
He is, isn't he? He's finally made that move. He's been trying to make it for quite a long time. I think it's a little bit too late to make inroads into the top two, but it's been a great run for GRT Magnus and Andy Lally. This is the team, of course, that won the opening race of the season at Daytona. So, didn't win it. They were on the podium at Daytona. Since then, it's been a bit of a struggle. But, this would certainly cap off the year well for them.
Oh, amazing driving by Dirani. And he was hit, actually, by Ricky Taylor. That's how close they were. Coming up into turn five, with Lally and Bell, as it was.
Yes.
Bell and Lally, as it is, fourth and third. Lally was in fourth at the time, right in front of them. And Ricky Taylor ran into the back of the Whelan Engineering People Dirani number 31 car, pitched it sideways. Not only did People catch the car, but he had enough presence of mind to get on the throttle and get between, and right in the braking area, went to the left of Lally and then dived to the right of Townsend Bell going into turn six, where I don't think there was a Cadillac's width. There was about maybe 3/4, 7/8 of a Cadillac's width, but that was about all. But quite clearly, the laws of physics don't apply to Pipo Dirani, because the speed he took into turn six was extraordinary. However, all that hard work has been reduced to nothing, because they're pretty much nose and tail again as they go across the line. As Renger van der Zander, remember we flagged up Renger earlier on, and he is still absolutely on the money in third position, and has just, Jeremy, put in the fastest lap of the race.
Not quite, but it's
a
9.09. I mean, he is the quickest car on the track, and he has been bringing that deficit down. It was 10 laps ago, it was 17 seconds. It's now down to 10 between the second and third place cars. What are we watching here?
Contact.
It's a battle. Okay, that was what I was going to say
that was the change move, position.
That move on Townsend Bell by the leaders was costly for Townsend Bell, because that brought Jan Halen right onto its tail.
Indeed,
what we saw just now was Townsend Bell being dive bombed there by Jan Halen. So Jan Halen is now up into fourth place in car number 16.
And Townsend Bell, who two laps ago was third, now down to fifth. And just around about half a second ahead of another Porsche of Pfaff Motorsports. Those Wright and Pfaff seem to hunt together as a Porsche pack. The strength of the Porsche is in the pack, and the strength of the pack is in the Porsche, surely. And Dennis Olsen trying to make up position. Oh, side by side for the lead again. And somehow Durrani holds on over the skyline at turn two, down through the S's. This is getting very dicey indeed. It's terribly entertaining to watch, but I'm not sure it's doing my blood pressure any good indeed. What a phenomenal run from these two guys.
And Dane Cameron, you predicted Renger van der Zande maybe doing it. Well, Cameron in the pursuing car has just done the fastest lap of the race, a 109.722, not long after Laurens Vanthoor produced the fastest lap in GTLM as well, a 116.669. He's too far away, I would say, from Fred McAveeke and Antonio Garcia to win the GTLM race, but it's still a great fight between the Porsche of Fred in 911, Antonio Garcia in the number three Corvette.
And van der Zande now less than 10 seconds, fewer than 10 seconds behind the two leaders. If there's any kind of schmozzle between these two, Renger van der Zande is right there to, well, not pick up the pieces, but to pick his way through any pieces that might still be on the circuit. And we've seen this happen before with people running out of fuel coming towards the white flag here at Motul Petit Le Mans. And there is the fourth place car off the track. So the fastest lap of the race, and then off the next time around for Dane Cameron at turn 10A and B, takes the scenic route down the inside. Here's a pass for the lead. There's a touch. Oh, he's taken them both out. He's taken them both out. That was Ricky Taylor diving down the inside.
What were you saying about van der Zande?
Renger van der Zande has gone through and takes the lead. Renger van der Zande in the championship leading car takes the lead. It's going to be a full course caution, and that could be all she wrote here. Full course caution with 11 to go, and Taylor dives down the inside at turn six of Durrani, a gap that was always going to close. Oh, sort that one out, race control, because that is going to be a massive talking point. A massive talking point. Been so clean, so incisive. Both of the cars spin, and I reckon van der Zande has gone through there as Ricky Taylor did recover, but was moving very slowly.
He has confirmed, yeah. Wayne Taylor Racing lead the motor race now by, from Ricky Taylor by 1.4 seconds. Big damage on the back of the 31 Cadillac as well. Positional lights flashing away, and desperately Pipa Durrani trying to get that car restarted. But I fear for the rear of that car after it tagged the tyre wall. That was turn six, wasn't it? Into the gravel trap there at six, but pretty sure Ricky Taylor rotated as well.
Yes, he did.
And found his way, yeah, facing
no doubt
180 degrees. So as he's rejoined, that's cost him 12 seconds just before, or just as the caution came out.
Shea Adam, Philippe Albuquerque, what has he got to do to win this race?
My heart is broken right now for Philippe Albuquerque. Last year, leading the race, had a brake disc failure. I seem to remember it exploding the left front. There were about 30 minutes to go, and from the lead of the race, had to bring the car into the pit lane. The year before, coming to the checkered flag, going up the hill to come underneath the bridge, leading the race, ran out of fuel. Philippe Albuquerque just can't win this. And I wasn't going to say it, but he had the chance to win Big Le Mans and Petit Le Mans in the same year.
Well, the 31 car with damage to the right rear being towed out of the gravel has
moving,
not yet dropped off the lead lap, has he? Don't think so, but there's too much damage. It's going to have to pull into the pit lane with 9 minutes to go. Rejoins, gravel all over the circuit there, and Durrani is moving. Well, it was again traffic, and everybody gets a bit excited. Debris on the circuit as well at that point, and it was a full 360 from the Acura as Taylor went down the inside. Durrani on the inside. It was the Corvette in front. Yeah. Goes to the racing line. and has to turn in at some point. I can't call that one, especially when you're battling for the lead. Both of the teams and their supporters will have very different views of that one, I suggest, Jeremy.
I completely agree with you, yeah, because number 77 car, the 31 car was kind of defending, then he moved out to take the line into the corner, which place, which point number 7 car dived for the inside, and then number 31 car tried to close the door, is how it looked to me, but I think I was wrong.
my question in those situations,
the overtaking driver,
yeah,
and the overtaking driver there was not completely alongside at the turn-in point.
Oh my goodness, he's, and also Ricky Taylor in rejoining, massively unsafe rejoin, very nearly broadsided Renger van der Zand as he came through unsighted through turn 6. I always look at those, Johnny, and say, would the overtaking car, would it have made the corner if it hadn't ran into the other car? And marginal, yeah, maybe.
Not sure, but I agree with Jeremy's point that Ricky was at best halfway alongside the 31 car. And often if you could spin the car in front out, then you weren't fully alongside or alongside enough. But, I mean, it's tough, and I wouldn't like to call that at all. But you're right. As Ricky then rejoined the race, he very nearly harpooned Ricky Renger van der Zander, I should say, now the race
leader. That
would
have been huge.
Massive.
Renger van der Zander had to really modify his line coming through turn 6. He would not have been able to see the Acura. It was sideways in the track and then pulled out right onto the racing line.
Oh, massive championship ramifications there, of course, as well, with number 31 car being punted out. Now it is a lap down. It is behind Tristan Vautier in the fourth position. I think the team might well redress that bounce and let the 31 car, if the car can run, might let it go ahead, number 5, just for the championship points, because number 5 car really
not
isn't
the same team
in
now, Jeremy.
The championship chase, huh?
Not the same team now.
True, but run by the same... The 5 and the 31...
Yeah.
Beg your pardon, of course. I'm so sorry. Too long a day, yes.
No, that's all right.
Scratch that.
That's all right. If Durrani can just keep going round, he will be no worse than fifth position, because 19 laps further back is Harry Tinknell. And we're coming back to green flag racing. So van der Zander and Taylor together, waiting to see if there'll be any penalty applied. Haven't even... yes, it is under review. No action. No what? Action for that coming together. So we have a battle with van der Zander and the two Team Penske cars. Well, Penske cars have led a charmed life down through the years here at Road Atlanta, particularly when running into other people. And that is going to be a huge controversial incident and no call. I said, though, in fairness to race control, I said it was a difficult call to make, and there's two sides to every story.
I think it's just six of one, half a dozen of the other, because Durrani had chosen his line, and as Jeremy said, there's a car off the track from GT Daytona in a big way, I think.
Down through the S's.
Is that Daytona car?
Lexus?
Yes. It's a Lexus.
Whole front end missing on that machine.
I'm sorry to say, I think that's the 14. With the yellow roof light here, is that the 14?
I can't tell.
No, I think it's a tough. Lexus.
It's not a Porsche. It's a Porsche, is it not?
It's a Porsche. Yeah,
white, red stripe down the front of it. It's so dark.
That's a big off.
Big spin with another car there.
It's a 912.
It's the 912. Vantor off. And that's it. Race over. 4 minutes to go, and that is not going to happen.
There was a Lexus involved as well.
Oh, there was another car further back up the track. Yeah, with the blue lights on. Sorry, I may have been looking at the wrong car there. So... the 912 of Vantor goes down the inside in the S's, and that is not a place to pass. But he was under pressure from the number 3 of Tonio Garcia, who of course has gone through into second place. So that was Townsend Bell in the number 12. So it wasn't the 14, it was the 12. And Ian Vassar Sullivan, Lexus in the wall. People Durrani getting a new rear end, but with 3.5 minutes to go, I fear that we will end under yellow flags. But that, in some ways, is good news for the Cunningham and Ott Cadillac team and for Renger van der Zande. He then potentially will not come under pressure from the two Acuras behind, one of which has nearly taken him out already, which is the car that's sitting behind him.
Yep.
Wow, wow, wow. Jack Schalowski, how does Petit always throw such insane finish? Wow. Vincent Bruins, Ricky Taylor wasn't alongside far enough to make that move. Luke Rogers, it was a late move, but the seven was more than half a car alongside. So that's the problem for race control.
Now faster.
Yeah.
Because he didn't brake as hard.
Well, indeed.
It's going to be a fun one to talk about this one, actually.
I think you can find an argument on both sides, actually, yes, whose corner it was. And then maybe that's the decision that race control made. Yeah.
So then what do you say? If it's, as you say, six of one, half a dozen of the other, do you give them both shared responsibility and penalise them both?
No,
or do you do nothing? My only slight issue with that, and I know you should never look at the outcome, but always the incident. The 31's in the wall and out the race, and the 6 could potentially have still won the race.
Yes.
And it's robbed us.
Yeah, yeah.
The point, it's robbed us of a great finish. No, so totally. Can we just box them both around the lugs when they get out the car? It's the old-fashioned way. Well, sad to say then, we've ended in full course yellow, unusually, but not uniquely here at Motul Petit Le Mans. And it's going to be the championship leading number 10, Renger van der Zande, Cunningham and Ott Cadillac, that will take the victory here with just a minute and a half to go. And we are not going to go back to green. Ricky Taylor salvages second position. That's where he was when that controversial incident occurred. That's going to get people talking. Hashtag Michelin PRT. You are race control. 7 at fault, 31 at fault. Shared responsibility or nobody at fault? You call it. Let us know. Hashtag Michelin PRT at IMSA Radio. It'll be a 2-3 for the Acura team Penske cars, with Fortier just off the podium for Mustang sampling. Tirani trailing around after the bodywork damage, came in for emergency service, but will only be in fifth position. Tower Motorsports by Starworks by 5 laps in LMP2, having been pushed all the way, and in fact trailing quite a long way of this race to the number 52 of PR1 Matheson Motorsport. That car went behind the wall some time ago. In GT Le Mans, finally in 2020. Well done, Core Autosport. Well done, Porsche GT team. And well done, the 911 squad. First win of the year for the Porsche, ahead of the Corvette and the BMW, with Corvette in fourth position as well. And in GTD, it's going to be a Ferrari. It's the Scuderia Corsa that will win it, from Hawksworth in second, for Lexus and then Lamborghini in third. Across the line under yellow, and the 2020 Motul Petit Le Mans is won by Konica Minolta and Renger van der Zande. Jeremy Shaw.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning. What a tremendous motor race. I mean, once again, the number 10 car comes out on top. They were charging along in the closing stages. You called it, John Hinoff. He could be there to pick up the pieces if he could pick his way through the pieces. He just about did that. He almost got collected by the number 7 car as well. An unsatisfactory ending to the race. But other than that, it was a brilliant race all the way through.
Yes, that's another hashtag blame Hindoff in this weekend, is it not, Jeremy? Where virtually every time we've said something has happened. Johnny Morland? Johnny Palmer Oh, it is late, isn't it? Johnny Palmer, your first Motul Petit Le Mans is one you will remember, I suspect, for a very long time.
Certainly, yeah. And as Jeremy makes the point, not necessarily for all good reasons, but relentless pace. And up until that bit of contact at the end, just a sublime event. And it all comes to a bit of a head, a bit of a crescendo. And the number 10 crew, the championship leaders coming into this round, were there to drive through the melee, through the chaos, and take victory. And high-fiving commences down at Wayne Taylor Racing. You've had the first Porsche victory of the season in GTLM. It could have been so different, of course, because the BMW, I think, was in the box seat as far as Augusto Farfus and the rest of the crew at 24 was concerned. So all those guys at Weissach Stuttgart will be very, very happy to finally get the first win in the books for the 2020 season. But they may feel a little bit lucky to have been in that position for Fred McAveeke to inherit the race lead. But a dominant display from Scuderia Corsa and that Ferrari 488 to take victory in GT Daytona. And in LMP2, a win for Tower Motorsport by Starworks. And Mikkel Jensen towards the end there was really on fire in the number 8 car.
Yeah, and drama at the end, of course, for the 912 of Lawrence Vanter, the Porsche, trying to stay ahead of the number 3 Corvette, Tonio Garcia, and hit the Lexus of Townsend Bell heavily into the wall for the Porsche. And that car then finishing down the GT Le Mans order in 5th position. Lots of things happening in the darkness at the end. We've said that, haven't we? Well, certainly some controversy. The tweet is tweet coming in from both sides. Quite like this from Joe Remy's War Room. I think race control is going with the, well, he lost the race, but it was awesome fun to watch, so don't penalise anybody. Interesting. Unsafe rejoin should have been penalised if nothing else, says Nikolai B. Does the ruling of no action between the 7 and the 31 not set the precedent that throwing a move up the inside is completely fine, even if you end up taking out another competitor? Oh dear, this is going to rumble on, I think. Hashtag Michelin PRT. Incident responsibility for the 912 for the side-by-side contact down through the S's. Now, that's interesting that that one was called and the turn six incident wasn't. I would suggest that he was further alongside than Ricky Taylor was, because he was absolutely onside and possibly even going past the Lexus, albeit in a place where you shouldn't really be trying to pass.
I actually think the Durrani and Taylor incident was down to Durrani choosing his line on the run into the corner and then compromising Ricky Taylor on the apex. And yeah, you know, there is a rule about keeping a lane free for your rival, and if you decided to go wide into that corner, then I don't know. It's he'd already gone from right side to left side, and the door was left wide open, and then it was shut at the very last moment. It's all down to how much visibility you have out the rear of these cars, though, as well, which is very, very tricky at the best of times.
Oh, he knew. He knew exactly where that car, both drivers knew exactly where the other car
there
as you're coming to the end of the race. Those are two very, very good drivers. Jeremy Shaw, do you have some points for us for the main championship?
Yes, I do. Where was I? Just working that out. So, Ryan Briscoe, Renko van der Zander came in here with a 3-point lead. They will leave with an 8-point lead up into second place. Much to the chagrin of the number 31 team, will be Ricky Taylor and Castro Neves. They'll have 207 to the 215 of Briscoe and van der Zander, and then the 203 of Pipo Durrani. Sebastian Bourdais will have 199. Jonathan Bomarito and Harry Ticknell down a position on 197. Manufacturers' Championship. Cadillac will extend its lead now from 1 points to 4 points over Acura, with Mazda now trading in third position. In LMP2, the season-long championship, Patrick Kelly has a clear lead there on his own. And GTD, I'm just trying to figure that out right now.
Thank you, Jeremy. We'll give you a moment or two to do that whilst we hand the P8 back to our colleagues in the Michelin Tower. Thank you very much, Dave Miller, and everybody. In fact, just before we do that, we've got a chance of an interview. Shea Adam, who have you got for us?
Cooper McNeil, two times a race winner at Petit Le Mans. The Ferrari looked good all weekend, and this is the ultimate birthday present that you could ever give Alessandro Balzan. How sweet is it to win here after 2 years?
Oh, yeah, it's huge. Thank you. Thank you. We're about to go on NBCSN now, so I'll make it short and sweet. But big thanks to the WeatherTech Scuderia, of course, the guys all weekend. They worked super hard and really, you know, worked tirelessly and improved the car every session. And really couldn't have done it without them. Huge. It's huge.
Congrats. Thanks, Cooper.
Thanks, Jay.
Very good. Excellent stuff in that VP Racing Fuel pit report. We'll head to Michelin Post Race Tech with our thanks to everybody at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. The conversation starts right now. Hashtag Michelin PRT at IMSA Radio.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.